in all of time, in all of history, man has never created one single living cell. Yet your body does that millions to billions of times a day. That's where I put my faith. So I try to encourage people. I want them to know that, listen, that there's a doctor 24/7 on the clock, making chemicals, making hormones, detoxing you. So yeah, compared to the smartest person you know or the greatest doctor you think, I'm just saying that level of intelligence is laughable compared to the wisdom that is in you right now, animating you so you can even hear me say this. If I can help you understand the magnificence of the body that God gave you, your fear of disease drops significantly. Your fear of a fever drops significantly because you realize that you're designed to heal. So I'm Dr. Ben Rall. Welcome to Designed to Heal.
Welcome back to Designed to Heal. My name is Jeff, here with Dr. Ben Rall. And man, we love when we have shows when it's you and I, but we even love more when we have guests, and we have a good one today.
You probably do. Well, you don't have to put up with me as much.
Well, that's true. I think the listeners probably do as well. But really, really cool guest today coming out from California. And so I won't steal your thunder. Why don't you tell us about this person, and really excited to get to talk to them.
Yeah, I am as well. And our guest today, but part of this is almost, selfishly, a lot of my topics are my own season of life. I have kids. Mm-hmm. I have a daughter that's interested in the arts, and I have, you know, my concerns about that industry, like maybe a lot of parents do, and, you know, things my kids are participating in, or maybe careers they want, but also just things they're watching, things they're listening to.
Of course.
And being a person of faith, it becomes then another level there that we think about, the things that we think about and the content we're putting in our minds. But regardless of your position of faith, I would say that I think we all understand that the things that we watch or listen to or hear affect us. This is not just unique to a faith-based perspective. If anything, we saw it happen through the pandemic, right? So many things that, you know, whether it's fear or whether it's information that we're not sure about. And so our guest today has entered into that space to make a difference. Our guest today is David Dietrich, and he is the co-founder and president of Creator Films, which he's a passionate about telling stories about faith, truth, and hope. His films have inspired hundreds of thousands in church services across the world. He knows the millions of people of faith across the U.S. are hungry to see characters like them represented in contemporary films. I know that my family is one of them. And so to talk to somebody that's really gone on the road less traveled, I'm sure he takes a lot of arrows and, you know, and gets asked all of the questions. He's in an industry that I think many have just written off, right? We've written off Hollywood. We've written off even creative works because we think they're almost unredeemable.
Yeah.
And so we are so excited to have and honored to have our guest on today, David Dietrich. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. It's an honor to be here.
Well, so you tell us a little bit about your journey, just a little bit of your backstory, maybe about your work, your family, kind of why you do what you do, and then we'll dive into some other stuff here.
Yeah. excuse me. Backstory. I mean, I really, it's all about communication. I growing up in college, thinking about like, you know, what do I want to do? You know, there was a awakening of faith in my life, just kind of becoming real, making that relationship with Christ, like a foundational thing in my life. And as I was processing through that in those college years and thinking about what I want to do, I realized the things that brought the most passion to me, the most comfort, the most, intrigue and engagement were, stories of truth. And, you know, they would instill hope. They would, instruct me and change the way I thought or saw the world. And I thought, you know, that's a really powerful thing. And I want to be part of that. Mm. And as I was in college, paying my own way, attending a junior college in California, I said, well, how do we do that in our society? You know, what is the mechanism of delivery? And, you know, this is two decades ago. And at that time, you know, film, like theatrically released films were huge. Television was huge. Mm. The internet was, you know, blossoming and a very big thing at that moment. But I mean, things like YouTube and streaming services had not even, you know, been thought of at that point. And it's only grown. So this desire to communicate as I was communicated to through filmmakers, through artists, through storytellers which Jesus is the greatest storyteller. When we look at, you know, the parables in the Bible, I mean, he uses story to change the hearts of the masses. So, excuse me, that got me on the path of, I want to communicate. I want to be a vocal piece of the apparatus of cultural communication to broadcast the truth, and to do that in an engaging and masterful way. That led me to, okay, how do I do that? I want to attend the, you know, the best film school I can. I ended up attending University of Southern California, which is, you know, if not seen as the best, and at least in the top three film schools in the world all the time. And,
how was that
scholarship?
How was that? I mean, because I saw that on your bio and I thought, okay, now that's interesting, because I don't know. You said you had already were kind of walking this faith journey out, had maybe a different perspective on what you wanted to do. Not that everybody there is, you know, heathens by any means. I don't mean that. I'm just curious.
No,
was it an enjoyable experience? It was really neat. It really was what it's billed to be. I mean, it's a pretty neat experience. Or how was that?
It's a really good question, because when I first started, I wanted to, you know, make films. You know, I thought, I don't want to make films that I couldn't show to Jesus, right? You know, I was like, I didn't want to make anything that would be like, you
hope
know,
that one doesn't come up.
yeah, right. You know, and then I went to USC, and I found myself in this odd position where, one, I mean, I was paying my own way. Okay. I was, you know, working full time while I was at school. So I wasn't part of like campus life. I didn't live on campus. I lived off campus. There was, you know, cheaper housing, and I would go to school. I'd be there, you know, 4 days a week, you know, like usually like 7 to 10 PM or 7 AM to 10 PM. And I would be on campus, but I often felt like I wasn't part of campus because I wasn't living there. I was a transfer student in. And I look back at this time, and I think a lot of it was kind of like time in the desert, because I had these hour long sessions of just sitting in the library, you know, reading, getting my work done for school, so that I had my weekends free because I was working, you know, on the weekends. And the Lord really like used that time of solitude in presence of, you know, people to just change even my perspective at that moment, because I went from, you know, I don't want to make anything that God would not be pleased with, to I want to give my first fruits. So I had this thought at one point, you know, every seventh film, you know, seven is a biblical number, and so every seventh film I will like make exclusively for God.
Okay.
You know, like that this is for him. This is an act of worship to him. And then by the time I got through, you know, to graduation, I thought, this is absurd. Like, I want to make everything for God. Like, I don't buy into the same mantra of Hollywood. I don't want to do this for my own fame. I don't want to do this. And it was just a testament of the Lord taking me through the desert or through the wilderness, kind of working some of these things out of me and focusing me on what he's really called me to do, is just to be a vocal mouthpiece for him in any capacity that I can.
So that had to be the road less traveled. I mean, even coming to that, you know, that place, even though it sounds like you got there, you know, through a crucible and not easy, and there's a lot of condensed story there, but even to come to that, know your calling is great, but doesn't mean it doesn't come without resistance.
Totally.
And what the heck? You went to this big fancy USC and you're going to make Jesus films. What are you doing, buddy? Right? This kind of stuff, maybe?
Well, and you know, it's interesting because there was, you know, and it wasn't from a lack of like wanting to find a group or, you know, things like, I thought, okay, I'm going to try to get involved in some of the Christian groups on campus or, you know, things like that. And every time there would be a meeting or anything like that, like I would have a required course that met at that same time. Hmm. I remember walking to classes and hearing students worship, in classes that I would walk by. And, you know, there's these innocuous things that somebody could just write off as, you know, happenstance or chance or whatever. But, you know, when you believe that there is a God who is with you and has a purpose for you, you know, if you believe what Scripture says, then you see some of those things and you say, no, like, this is God's hand encouraging and reminding, you know, like, no, I am with you. I know that the path is rough right now. You know, I know, you know, at that time I'm working 30 to 40 hours a week. I'm doing, you know, full-time school. I'm separated from my friends' network and my family network and my church networks, you know, away at school. And it's, there's just that kind of time, in the wilderness, you know, where you're like, okay, the Lord's refining. And, you know, I wasn't suffering. I mean, I had food, I had, you know, equipment, I had study, you know, I knew, like, I would talk to people in class, but it never, like, I remember very interestingly, the very last day of class I had was the first time that I met another Christian in class. And we had been in class the whole semester with one another, but it was, even in that, it was kind of like, it just didn't come up, you know? I mean, like, we're not going to talk about faith in class because we're sitting there, we're listening to lecture, we're talking about film, you know? There were times in my production classes that I would, you know, I would bring something up. I mean, I remember in one of my early production classes, one of the female students, and this was like 20 years ago, you know, made a short student film, and it was just filled with nudity and sex and drugs and this whole thing. And I remember just saying, like, you know, like, I'm not trying to be, you know, this prude of, you know, like, oh, like, you heathen, but just making a comment of, you know, when you put scenes like this in, I mean, you really, you have to be careful because you're taking the male viewer out of the story often, and now they're only focused on the nudity. And, you know, and it was just such a rejected idea. It was like I was crazy to even say that. And I don't even feel like that's a faith statement. I feel like that's kind of a biological statement. Yeah. You know, just that,
yeah, right.
You know, there's a drive that comes up and whatnot.
Was
so,
it, was school, was it, I'm just curious, because I think, you know, not many people get to go to those special, like, universities like that kind of, was it a neat experience? I mean, do you still use a lot of the tools and things that you learn and just the way of maybe understanding communication and storytelling and film in that regard? Was it what it's billed to be? I'm just curious.
Yeah. So I mean, I'm a firm believer in that you get out what you put in when it comes to education. And, you know, I had one of my best professors was William Fraker. He was the cinematographer on, you know, like Rosemary's Baby and 1942, I think is the name of the film. It's a Spielberg film and a number of other films. I mean, he's a very prominent cinematographer in kind of the, you know, some of the late heydays of, you know, cinema. And, you know, just a really nice guy, like super encouraging to share his experience, you know, with students who are kind of coming through. And there's always little nuggets and little jewels that come through. I mean, I remember, you know, something that I always try to remember is just that, like, often simplicity is better. You know, like, how can we simplify a scene? How do we move an image, how do we move a story forward through the images we're showing, not through dialogue, not through, you know, exposition or explanation of, you know, like, and then this happened and then this happened and then this happened, but showing it with image. And so there's definitely things that, you know, kind of pull through, that you pick up and you apply. So, you know, that said, I do recommend, as students, you know, when students come to me and they say, look, I want to do this, I want to do that. I mean, something I always ask them is like, well, what are you expecting to get out of this? And, you know, you got to go in with a plan, and you can't just, you know, go in and expect somebody else to pave your path.
So, okay, you get out, and speaking of paving a path, so now rubber meets the road. Yeah, you're out of the kind of the safety confines sometimes of, I remember in my world, you know, graduating doctorate school, it's like, okay, all this talk about taking care of people, now you got to go take care of people. You know, now you got to go make your movies. Yeah, yeah, exactly. It's like, they didn't teach me this. They taught me all the things I'm supposed to put on a test. But of course, it's exciting time, but it can be, like you said, almost, sometimes it's different than you think, but clearly you've done some unique things in the industry. I mean, through how you crowdsource your films, how you, so tell us a little bit about kind of the impetus to this creator films, this idea. What are you, because to me, and I'll just kind of put my cards out there, David, like to me, it's, you know, it's an area, like, I think it really matters what we watch, what we see. I mean, if you're going to see the statistics that are out there from how much time we're on screens nowadays, right? From, you know, 7 to 12 to 16 hours a day, that means we're watching something. And it's, you know, I mean, we all joke about Netflix or joke about whatever. Like, clearly, to your point, you know, big film cinema from years ago going to movie theaters, it's not dead, but it's different, right? Most people are watching these things at home and on streaming services. You are in people's living rooms. There's a lot there, but I think that we've gotten so numb to, and I'm saying this to myself. I mean, we just get numb. It's almost like we were watching a movie. My wife and I were watching a movie the other night thinking it was supposed to be like just a comedy, like kind of a lighthearted comedy. And we weren't in a few minutes and we were like, what? Like what, you know, just the stuff on there, you know, we kind of look at each other like, do we want to keep going or what's going on here? So what is some of your just founding principles and about your company and what is different? I'd like to just hear kind of that story.
Yeah, I mean, we talk about Creator Films as a company owned by people of faith who are making media for the world. So I'm very, you know, I think one of the things that happens in the church, and I do believe that this is a lie of the enemy, like it's a lie from the world, it's a lie that we believe in ourselves often, is that we're powerless, that we can't do anything. We just kind of have to pray to God and say, like, Lord, you know, we need you to move because we can't do that. And that is not a biblical worldview. You know, there's a passage that talks in the Gospels that talks about that the gates of hell will not withstand. And so often as Christians, we think that that means that, like, they will not be allowed to invade. But the gates of hell notwithstanding means that they will not stand against the expanding and the pushing forward of the believer, that we will take ground from them and they will not be able to protect. So Creator Films really is built on this mindset, and that, like, we want to gather a community of believers, gather a community of people of faith who see the impact that media can have on the world and in whatever sphere that we're in, that we can make, you know, micro, macro, outrageously large steps forward in that space, speaking truth and speaking hope and speaking, you know, the grace of God into people's lives through story. And, you know, that's kind of our heartbeat. That's what makes us go. And we've gathered, you know, a little over 160 investors. We've raised a little over $500,000 to $750,000 to create content. And we've been able to release a feature film, which is a romantic comedy called About Hope. It's on most of it's been through most of the streaming services, but is now available on things like Tubi and Freevee. There's even, there's licensing been granted to some like YouTube stations. So it's even available on YouTube. You know, we completed that, we put that out into the world as kind of our first project as a experiment, and God's been super gracious with that. And we actually were able to do a theatrical release with it. We opened in the top 20 with, you know, no notable actors in the film. But you know, we just were in this unique situation coming out of the pandemic where we had a film and theaters needed films. And so, you know, we opened nationwide 75 theaters. It was kind of like, wow, you know, God takes what was meant for evil and uses it for good. Now we have a feature film, or a feature documentary called The Unseen War that's being released, this September. And that was created in partnership with Victor and Eileen Marks of All Things Possible. It's a great organization. You guys can kind of check them out. And that really has even just re-solidified us into what our call is, just being more aware of the spiritual attacks and how we can, you know, really protect ourselves, like create a healthy environment for us to thrive in our calling, in what God has called us to do.
You know, David,
and then we also have children's content.
One thing that comes to mind, I don't know if this is a proper metaphor or not, but there's one reference to that film you were just talking about. I want to maybe talk through for a second, because so like in healthcare, I think part of the challenge we've missed, or part of the misstep we took, is we forgot about actual healthcare, like taking care of ourselves, right? It's more like fight disease. You know what I'm saying, right? Like get rid of the bad guy and then we'll be healthy. Well, no, you just won't have a bad guy, but you won't by definition necessarily be healthy. Matter of fact, we need to, it's about resilience. It's certainly, now there's a time and a place, you jump off a building and break your leg. That's a different type of injury. But though like to this movie about, you know, the spiritual warfare and understanding this, it doesn't mean that I'm walking around all day long looking for the devil, right? And seeing where I can, it's an understanding that there is one, right? And kind of the full armor of God, and that we don't have to walk around in fear, and that we can actually walk around in being salt and light and living in that freedom that we are called to live in. And so when I think about this film, because there's an opening, I watched the trailer and there was an opening line, I think it was the first line actually. And one of the people said, you know, I go around and I interview people and I ask them, you know, do you believe in a God, or that there is a God? And he said, a lot of times I will hear no. And he said, but then I'll ask them, do they believe in evil? And he said, well, almost without a doubt, almost, they will say, oh yeah, certainly believe in that. And that statement is interesting. We had a guest on years ago on this show. He was an atheist medical doctor turned pastor, but his impetus on his journey was basically a bunch of horrible things happened very quickly, right? 9/11 happened, and then I think they lost a close family member, and then maybe another thing. And basically his conclusion was, if there is this kind of evil, then there has to be the opposite. And then what is that, right? And so do you mind, because here's why I'm bringing this up. I think people, there is a lot of junk out there and we get desensitized to it. And then we forget there is actually good. So it appears as though the enemy is winning. It appears as though, you know, just Hollywood is taken over by the devil and I'm just not even going to deal with it anymore, right? Not to, just group you into Hollywood, but, you know, film creation, things like that. So what's your take on that, and take that any way that you want to respond. I know you're a dad, you've got kiddos, so you think about it as from that perspective too, probably just like I do. Give us your thoughts on that.
Yeah. I mean, I think having gone through the experience, I mean, it was like a year and a half of interviewing best-selling authors, pastors, you know, we interview talk show hosts and, you know, just a variety of people talking about, like, what is spiritual warfare? And the most impactful thing that I kind of pulled from that, the most like aha moment was, there is a lot of confusion, and a big part of the confusion, a big part of the tactic, I'd say, that creates that confusion is misrepresenting, you know, what the spiritual war is, right? We often think about the war in terms of the self experience.
Okay.
Right. So we think of the spiritual battle is between me and evil, or me and Satan, me and the demonic, right? It's about my behaviors and how well I am behaving morally, right? We think that is the spiritual battle. The spiritual mm-hmm. battle is the devil's trying to make me do bad things.
Did I resist and enough sin today? Or battle, yeah, yeah.
Exactly. Yep. But that's not the spiritual battle that the Bible talks about, at very least, right? The spiritual battle in the Bible is between God and Satan. It's a rebellion of the demonic, starting in Genesis, and then moving through into Revelation. And that rebellion is trying to spread into humanity. So if you think of the demonic as a virus, right, that is trying to infect their rebellion, their thoughts, their hate and loathing of God, and to get you to join that, right? It changes the way you think about it, because my participation in the spiritual battle, if I believe my participation in the spiritual battle is that I have to be holy, then not only has the enemy distracted me from my actual mission, which is to be salt and light, it's to be external, it's to go out into the world and do something, not to be in the world and resist something. But it's to be in the world and do something. I'm on the battlefield. I'm not, you know, a civilian on the sideline just trying to be a good guy. If you believe that, you've been taken out of the war and the enemy wins. Mm. But even more so, if you believe that your spiritual battle is about you being more moral, then he's also twisted the gospel to make you believe that your primary battle is a works-based thing of your worthiness and morality, when that has, according to Christian theology, been completed. It is a completed work on the cross, that your sin has been paid for and you are righteous because you not have the righteousness of yourself, but you have the righteousness of Christ. So both of those tactics are victories for the enemy. And as we've gone through and, you know, gone through this process and identified this and then started talking to people in the church that are in, they are believers. They love Jesus. They identify right and wrong, good and evil, the sin and righteousness. They know these things. They've been taught these things. And yet they are just bound up in self-deceit, habitual sin, addiction, like any of these things. And what we found is that Christians are taught to confess things, but they are not taught to rebuke things. They're not taught to renounce things. And if you have, you know, I use this example a lot in pastoring and counseling. You know, I run into a lot of guys who are struggling with sexual addiction of some sort. Very often is pornography. And when they are dealing with this, what they've been told is you need to study the Bible more, you need to know the truth more, you need to believe the truth more, you need to be in fellowship, you need to do these things. None of those are bad advice. But if I sent a soldier out into the battlefield and said, you need to know your weapon, you need to know your reason for being there, you need to go out and, you know, just be with other people while you're there, they're not equipped to fight in the battle. They need to use that weapon in training. They need to develop the skill sets to go out and combat against the enemy, not against themselves, right? So I talk to these guys and I say, have you done disciplines of self-denial? Have you practiced fasting? Have you practiced, you know, investing in others? Have you taken, you know, at moments when you're not being tempted, when you're not chemically wound up, are you doing things that are creating disciplines, creating patterns, training in righteousness, so that when, like Ephesians says, when the day of evil comes, you will be prepared to stand? And then the second thing is, I will talk to them about when they're under attack. Right. When they're sitting there and there's some thought that comes into their mind, some kind of thing, and they know, they like, I don't want to think this. This isn't like that they're just embracing this, but they're having thoughts in their mind that they don't want. And my response to that is, if you don't want the thought, then it's not your thought. That is a fiery dart. That is an attack from the enemy. And we don't confess attacks. We rebuke them. We renounce them. We stand against them. If we just sit here and navel gaze and feel so bad for ourselves because, man, I'm having these thoughts. I'm having these thoughts. No, you're not. You are being attacked by the enemy, and you need to stand against that external force. Because if you don't stand against them, then what do? You confess them. And when you confess the temptations of an external force, it's like going back, coming off the battlefield and having been shot and apologizing to your commanding officer. I'm sorry, I was shot. Did you shoot yourself? No. When a soldier comes back from battlefield and they were shot, we don't shame them. We give them a medal because they were in battle. And we need to have this perspective changed, because if we are victims, if we feel like we're powerless in this, then we will never be healthy. We will never be equipped. We will never have the confidence and the boldness to go out and change the world that we see that needs changing. Because we think it's not our role. We don't have to work towards it. We're just waiting for God to do that. And that's that's a lie. That's a lie of the enemy.
Man, there's so much there. I can't help, as I listen, to think about the same twist, the same perversion, David, has affected people when it comes to their health. And I'm not even trying to make this about health.
Yes.
I'm just thinking about it because I know it's your area of expertise.
No, but it's totally intertwined.
It's like people think, if you don't think that our show's called Designed to Heal. So, you know, if you don't think that you're created, you know, by, you know, a God very intelligently, and he created you specifically, and he created you in his likeness and image. So you just think it's just this happenstance, big punch of chemicals that you don't have any control over. And it's just all up to your genetics, whether or not you're going to have a heart attack or something. And then you would feel so disempowered to make any change. You're seeing this happen right now with obesity. They're trying to just say, hey, there's nothing you can do. Just take Ozempic. You know, I mean, that's basically the summation of the science right now that they're trying to get people to believe. And it's hard to see that. So yeah, the same thing. If you think you are powerless against the fiery darts, if you think that you are just a pawn to the enemy, then that is going to affect how you are even going to approach or believe what you can. And it is going to, it's a very powerful metaphor. And I think you touched on something. I don't think I wrote it down right, David, but like not self-restriction, but what did you say? It's self something where, you know, they fasting and things like that, right?
Self-discipline.
I mean, people... We've grown up in this time, again, having kids like you do, right? Where we always hear, we want instant gratification. We want to be entertained all the time. We don't want to, say no. It's just like, I want this food, and I want it now, and I want it to be amazing, and I want it, delivered to my house. And if I stand in line for more than 0.4 seconds, I need a TV show to watch, and I need, we just have this comfort and this window. It's so narrow of just basically sensual comforts. That anything outside of that, we feel like this isn't fair, right? And I think even in Christianity, honestly, the world, but certainly in Christianity, even it's been infected where we start to think, hey, if my church doesn't give me, the right flavored coffee and the comfortable chair and the sermon didn't tickle my ears enough and the music wasn't enough of a rock star performance or whatever, fill in your blank, then it's not doing it for me. And I think, not to make this even back to your film, but you probably run into this where when you're making your works, your films, it's like, you're up against the multi-zillion dollar budgets of whatever, right? Yeah. Some movie. And so you want to make quality film and then at the same time, not participate in the parts of that are not, edifying and things like that. So let me ask you, and then you can take that, but curious, what would you say to people? Because I have to imagine that there's so many people that are creative. They're creative. My son is really great at music. My daughter is really into art and craft and some acting that she's done, things like that. But she, they're afraid of the industry. Like, so my son, he loves guitar. And so we study, or he listens to these Jimi Hendrix or something. And it's been kind of awake or kind of this interesting story for him. Cause he's like, well, Dad, where's Jimi Hendrix now? Right. I'm like, well, he died of a drug overdose. Right. And this has come up like six times right? Like, what happened to this guy? Well, he died of a drug overdose. What happened to this guy? He died of a drug overdose. My son was finally like, what? What's going on here? Right. And
isn't it amazing? Like, just to highlight that, I'm just thinking about, isn't it amazing that the artist who does not know God, who does not know the purpose of his call to create, so often ends in emptiness and suicide, drug overdose, like just tragedy. Like,
interesting.
When you disconnect the artist from the
creator,
the purpose, from the creator, like, that is a recipe for disaster. And we see that over and over and over and over again.
Do you think that, I think it's a human experience. You put any of us in front of a majestic mountain, Grand Canyon, doesn't matter, waterfall, you know.
Anywhere in Alaska.
Anywhere in Alaska. Like, you can't, I think everybody is moved, right? Now, you see, you can see a beautiful designed building or a neat space. I've got a friend who's a restaurant designer. I just saw one of his properties this weekend. Amazing. And, but, you know, at the same time, and he was kind of talking to me about, he's like, you know, I build these things and it's amazing and it's a fun thing to do. But sometimes at the end of the day, it still kind of makes him feel like, you know, what next, right? Or what now? I guess my question was going to be, if you could take a moment and speak to that generation, or it could be contemporaries, that, man, I just feel like I want to create, I want to do art, I want to draw, I want to design, I want to sing, but I feel like that industry's so corrupt. I don't want to participate. So they feel like they don't have a home anymore. Of course, there's places like yours, but what do you say to that person? Because that was maybe you. What do you say to that person? What do you have encouragement for them, or advice even, I guess?
Yeah, I mean, the most straightforward thing I could say is that your desire is not to paint or to act or to sing or to, you know, play music or to create, but it is to communicate. And you have to create art. You know, there's in the Christian community, there's always this saying that comes up about, you know, I perform for an audience of one.
Sure.
And I always tell my students that, like, that's not true. You perform because of God. You perform to communicate God. He is the spirit behind it, but you're performing for a people. You're trying to communicate a message. And if you are performing for an audience of one, too often that one gets confused with yourself. And I have found peace in creating art, you know, because my only concern is that I reach people. I'm creating with a purpose. And, you know, I can do that through a film. I can do that through web comics. I can do that through a story. I can do that through a podcast interview. I can do that through a Sunday morning sermon. I can do that teaching kids in Sunday school. I can do that in conversations with my children. The artist so often, and the biggest attack that the enemy will come with, the biggest deception that will come at you, is your identity is in what you create. And your identity is not in what you create. Your identity is in who created you and who paid for you, who is sponsoring you, right? And if you can find security in that, then the pressure of receiving accolades and affirmation from the audience, from the people, those start to lift. And you start to look at, well, what opportunities do I have? And so many people get into the arts wanting the glory, wanting the fame, wanting to, you know, like, I want to win an Academy Award. I want to do this. And, you know, growing up, I remember... you know, it's funny. I think it's Sinead O'Connor. No. When she won, I think it was a Grammy. I don't remember for sure. And there was all this outcry that she didn't go and receive it.
Okay.
Because she didn't care about it. And there was like this public shaming that went on. I remember this as a kid, just thinking like, yeah, why wouldn't she go get the award? Like, I mean,
almost rude of her not to do that.
Why would she not care? Yeah. Yep. And now on the other side, I'm like, I totally understand. Like, she wasn't creating for the applause. She was creating to communicate something. She had experienced, you know, I mean, there's a lot of mental anguish, drug addiction, like, things in her history. I'm not a, you know, an expert on Sinead O'Connor. I know she recently died. But she had experienced things, and she was trying to communicate what she had learned through those experiences through the art. And I believe in you know, even an artist who doesn't know God can tap into the divine in that way. And that's when art lasts, and when it's, you know, greater than what we feel like, you know, it just transcends time, because it taps into human experience, and that human experience has a designer, has a creator. I mean, that would be kind of my general push to artists, is like, be comfortable being poor, be comfortable, be comfortable, you know, living a life of less and focusing on what am I trying to communicate, you know, and then just be happy doing that. You know, communicate it wherever you can.
Do you think, as we kind of wind down here a little bit, do you think, because I know I've alluded to this, but I just really want to hear you kind of speak to this, because again, I think you have this unique role, or this unique kind of trifecta. Mm-hmm. You're a dad, but you're also a pastor. You also make movies. Like, it's, you know, you have a, you know, the pedigree training in the art of filmmaking. You know, you work with, you know, you professionally do this. So, and you believe in the impact that it has. Do you have a I don't even want to say a warning, David. I mean, we're all adults here, but like, mm-hmm. from your experience, so you brought up about, you know, a lot of men that you work with that struggle with sexual addiction or porn, right? Yeah. Primarily through the eyes, right? That's how that happens.
Yep.
Do you have, just from what you've seen, either being as a pastor or making movies and stuff, do people, any warnings like that you would want to say to our audience, like, hey, so I had this young gentleman that I met one, or a gentleman I met one time that I had gotten to know, and he really struggled with addiction to porn. And he said, mm-hmm. and I honestly didn't have a lot of experience with that in my life. So I never really had like this real transparent conversation with somebody about it. And I said, well, do you mind, like, how did it start? And he said, mm-hmm. he goes, oh, I mean, he like immediately, he goes, I was 10 years old. I had an mm-hmm. iPad. And mm-hmm. I was just playing like a game on it or something. And then all of a sudden, like, another video came by, I clicked on it. And I just remember seeing this. And I never, from that moment, it's like it had its hooks in me. And he goes, and he started getting almost angry. He goes, if I could go back and just destroy that iPad, like, he was like, I would do mm-hmm. anything to not have had that happen. And so do you have some wisdom for us when it comes to what we take in through our eyes, what we lend our mind and our time to, just as for parents and or just for us as people, as adults?
Yeah. So there's a biblical concept of putting off and putting on. And I think this conversation is so often centered around avoidance and not preparedness, right? So, you know, I think about that story with that young man, and he's like, man, I wish I could go back and destroy that iPad. If it wouldn't have been that iPad, it would have been something else.
Right.
You know, like, we live in the world. You know, you talked about earlier this allusion to, you know, we don't have to look for the devil in everything, or you know, that the devil's always there or whatever. And there's a reason we say that. And we say that because, you know, we live in a physical world, and we don't want to be perceived as, you know, sensational or crazy mm-hmm. or, you know, like out of touch with reality and these kind of things. But as we think about, you know, like the other biblical oppositions, the world system and our flesh, mm-hmm. like, we would not say the world is not always existent around us. We would not say that, like, we don't always struggle in the flesh that we you know, carry around.
Gotcha.
And yet we want to minimize the spiritual or the demonic attack and danger that is out there. So it's not a question of how often, but how potent, and where does that power come from, and how do we protect against it? Because we don't have to sensationalize it. We've been given a clear instruction on how to combat those things. So as I look at my own children and think, okay, how do I prepare them? I do not prepare my son to battle against the temptations of the world, because that advertisement that came up on that iPad is an attack from the world. It is the world system propagating a value system, a culture, a set of lies, and a distortion of a God-given passion in a young man for sexual intimacy, and is trying to distort that and satisfy it in a way that harms him and the people that he's involved with, or the images that he's involved with. So first thing would be, we have to understand how to protect against it, how to fight against it, not how to avoid it. We have to stand against the enemy, not retreat from the enemy. So, you know, this is something, this is why I'm so passionate about creating media. Our children's program is about dogs helping kids. And it's based on real life characters. We think it's brilliant, of course, because we made it. You know, it's tested really well. We're out there trying to raise distribution funds for our first season. But at the core, the dogs go and help a child stand against the attacks of the FEAR, this organization called FEAR, which stands for the Federation of Evil and Rebellion. So we're creating children's content that is showing children how to stand against the lies of the enemy. So whether that be discouragement, whether that be division, whether that be, you know, just straight out lies of, you know, this is real, or you're this, or right, you're that. And the dogs come in and counter those lies with truth, so that those children are then equipped by the end of the episode to stand on their own. And as parents, absolutely, I need to, you know, just as I need to watch the diet, the physical diet of my child, I need to watch their digital diet. I need to, you know, curate what is going in. But I cannot think for one moment that somehow I'm going to avoid the world, that I'm going to avoid the spiritual attack. I have to prepare my child to stand on their own. So when it comes to, you know, like a lot of people will come into the response of this and say, the solution is to no YouTube, no Netflix, no nothing. Pull the devices. Let's go live in a convent. Let's go or a you know, community. We'll be off grid. We'll do this. Again, if we see that our mission is to be holy and unblemished, then we've missed our mission, because we already are holy and unblemished by the work of Christ. And if the enemy can get us to believe that all we have to do is retreat enough, we're playing into his hand. So, you know, as I look at my own kids, you know, like, we want to monitor time, but we also want to teach them how to navigate well. So, you know, I give my son supervised time on YouTube, but I don't necessarily always control, you can only watch these things. And I tell him, if this comes up, so, you know, I mean, he's seven years old. He likes to watch Minecraft videos. Some Minecraft video producers are great. And, you know, they're just telling funny, you know, silly little stories in Minecraft. And some of them are doing very devious things, like torturing people, or, you know, blowing up the world, or whatever. And if I teach him to identify the lies and say, hey, when someone says, when someone's using God's name in vain in the video often, we don't want to be around that, because then what happens is we might start adopting that vocabulary, because we're creatures of imitation. So, you know, to me, it's a much more complicated solution, because it doesn't give somebody a formula that says, do this, and then you don't have to think about it anymore.
Right.
The truth is, you have to think about it all the time. You have to look for opportunities to bring in the spiritual truth that is required to combat that moment, because those are moments of training, so that when the day of evil comes and they're standing on their own without you there to support them and take them through that, that they will make those same decisions.
You know, I think about, it's good. That's good. I mean, that is some, that's wisdom right there that I don't think we hear very often. I think it, it often gets, like you said, just, it almost reminds me of, like, I don't know, you're going to walk through. I remember one time I was young. I was maybe, I don't remember, 13 or something. And I was going to a boxing tournament, and it was down in Louisiana by New Orleans. We were in the area. And so my dad's like, well, we should, you know, I want to take you there so you can see New Orleans. Well, the way that it ended up working out was it ended up being kind of in the evening, right? Well, so we're walking downtown and he was like caught off guard. He was like, whoa.
Yes.
Like, you know, I remember him saying, your mom is going to kill me. As I really remember
they
what
have
saying.
An open door policy in New Orleans.
And so he was like, well, you know, oh my gosh. Right. And so we had quite an experience there that night, but point was, so I look, and again, I keep just, cause my world is healthcare. It's like the mentality that thinks you're going to stay away from every germ. And the irony of that is, you think if you could do that you won't be sick, but actually there's some weird symbiotic relationship. Now, what I'm not saying is you need a little sin in your life to be healthy. So that's where the metaphor falls apart.
No.
But I also don't go around licking toilets, right? And just saying, hey, so I'm prudent, but I'm also not in fear. And that is that strengthening. I would say it personally has grown over time. I'm 45. I've been, you know, saved for a number of years now. And so I feel like I get a better grasp of what you described. I would say younger, in my younger days, I would not have understood what you said. I would have just been like, I got to just stay away. Stay away from the bad stuff. And I think that, of course, we're not talking about openly seeking it out. But even if you talk in the scriptures, many times as you were talking about being salt and light, we are called to, I mean, that's part of what we do. We're in this world, this lost world, this fallen world, whatever words we want to use. And so I think that's what caught me so much off of your work. You're going in, not self-righteously, not that you've got it all figured out, not that you know, but saying, hey, let's go in and bring light. Let's go in and talk about these things. And I think you're right. You're just really kind of rattling my mind here today. I'm going to have to listen to this episode just so I can think more about it. But I'm really grateful for a new perspective, because I think we've lost our way a little bit. I think we're seeing that doesn't really work out. It makes sense at the very beginning, right? Like, well, of course, just don't engage. It's bad stuff. But then you fully extrapolate that. I've heard it said, you know, any strength fully extended is a weakness, right? At some point, it becomes so counterproductive. All we are is hiding out in our little caves by ourselves saying, look at all the bad guys. And we've missed the gospel then. Okay. And totally. So as we kind of wind down, I want to make sure people know how to follow you. So, you know, your next film is supposed to come out here at the end of the year. They can go watch the trailer. They can watch some of your previous work on many of the streaming. So why don't you kind of tell us how they can stay in touch with you? Some people might be listening to this and really got moved and they want to donate or support, or I guess I can say in your case, become part owner of your company. Just a little bit how that works or how they can follow up with you.
Yeah. I mean, you know, our website is creatorfilms.com. All of our social media handles, Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn, I think we do, you know, just about everything except I don't know that we have a TikTok. Okay. Actually, I have to ask my Facebook manager or my social media manager. But it's all at our creator films.
Okay.
And, you know, we are a David versus Goliath, you know, organization. We're scrappy. We're small. You know, when I say we've raised, you know, between $500,000 and $750,000, and we've produced two feature content and a 3D animated pilot for a children's show, that is a almost unheard of application of funds. And, you know, right now we are we're really at a critical point where we're actually actively in a stock round right now. So we have stock available. We're doing a crowdfunding campaign through WeFunder.
Okay.
And, you know, we have to continually every year, you know, raise between $50,000 and $100,000 just to kind of keep the doors open and push forward. We've got distributors that we're talking to about our kids show. We're looking forward to the release of the documentary. We've seen a lot of spiritual fruit just in our own personal lives and church and people we've been able to kind of counsel and talk to. But we can't do this on our own. Like, we're not single soldiers out in the battle. We need our investors. So I would say, you know, prayer support is always good for favor upon us. We need to find a distributor for our kids' content. Mm. But also just the opportunity to kind of get off the couch and stop complaining about content, but really become active in stewarding resources to see content created. Because, you know, we have to come into the fight as a community. You know, I can't do this alone. I love my investors. We have such great people behind us who have, you know, just invested in us multiple years and, you know, kind of followed through. But, you know, this is not a work that I'm doing. It's really a work that we have all done together. And the prayer support of, you know, the investors that we have, the community, even people who have not invested or just, you know, on our list and follow us, you know, the ideas that have kind of, you know, come from the community, even just the screen testing and, you know, being able to preview stuff and get feedback, you know, all of these things help us save funds, help us be more efficient and effective in what we believe our call is, which is to be a light. That's, and to go out there and create counter messaging.
I think it's funny. I didn't anticipate this, how the call would go, the show would go today, but you use the metaphor, you know, sometimes we got to get off the couch, right? It's the same with health.
Yeah.
It gets like, you can read about exercise. You can read about eating good. You can think about it a lot. You can talk about it, but unless you do it, you don't get the benefits of that. And so if, to your point, if we're going to sit around and complain about everything and all this, and there's nothing good out there, well then when people do rise up like yourself and say, hey, I'll make some movies, right? We'll make some content. Then we go, hey, awesome. Beautiful. Great. Let's get behind that and support that. And there's lots of ways to do that. Well, David, I have been so encouraged, and honestly, just kind of sit in my car after this conversation and just think through some things, because you shared a perspective that I think has been lost about how we are to go navigate out in these tumultuous times, which are not unique to our time in history. There's been crazy times before, and there'll be crazy times again. And we're not all going to be able to just go live off the grid with our chickens, you know. Although that there's days where that sounds really good. Don't get me wrong, right? There are days.
Amen.
Like I was at one this weekend, and I was like, I want to live here with this thing, you know.
Yes.
And in this, it was so quiet out there, I couldn't hear the traffic. I was like, this is not too shabby. But that's not what we're called for. That's just not what we're called for. Yep. And the scriptures are very clear about that. But I think anybody that's been alive for any length of time knows that we're called to be in this thing together, and we're called, and it is, and it is a battle. And so thanks for fighting the good fight and for doing it in a different way, in a unique way, and staying the course. And can't wait to see your next film and have to have you back on to talk about future works. But just appreciate you. Thank you so much for your time today. God bless.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to Designed to Heal. Always remember that the greatest doctor lives inside of you, and God gave you what you need to be healthy and well. Connect with Dr. Ben at drbenrawl.com or achievewellness.clinic. And please share this podcast with someone who needs to hear it, and follow us on Instagram at Designed to Heal Podcast.